Welcome to The Point. I'm Mindy Todd. Excessive nitrogen, along with other nutrients from our wastewater, has significantly degraded our coastal embayments, estuaries, and ponds. Last summer, the Mass Department of Environmental Protection created new nitrogen-sensitive areas in Barnstable County. As part of those regulations, Mass DEP created a voluntary watershed permit program for towns across Cape Cod to demonstrate how they'll reduce nitrogen pollution. One of the reasons many communities have been slow to reduce nitrogen pollution are the steep costs of sewering and alternative septic systems. Once on the fringe, urine diversion and eco-toilets are seeing renewed interest because of their low costs. Does the state allow for the adoption of urine diversion toilets as a method to reduce nitrogen? If not, why? And if urine diversion toilets become part of the wastewater solution, what do we do with all of the urine? Joining us to talk wastewater, Brian Baumgartel. He's the Senior Environmental Specialist with Barnstable County Department of Health and Environment and Director of the Massachusetts Alternative Septic System Test Center. You got a long business card. Hi, Brian. Welcome back.
Thank you.
And Brian Horsley, Project Assistant at the Mass Alternative Septic System Test Center, who's currently studying how to use urine collected from no-mix toilets. Welcome back to you, Sue.
Thanks for having me.
All right. So, Brian, bring us up to date on where we are with state wastewater regulations and watershed permits. Are towns in the process of applying for these permits, and are there any towns in Barnstable County that are not required to file for these plans?
Well, the new watershed regulations really impacted just about every town on Cape Cod. There's a few on the outer Cape that aren't really faced with the immediate specter, at least, of having to do these watershed permits. But it right now it impacts, I think, 11 or 12 out of the 14 towns. And some of them are beginning to file their paperwork for this. And it's not a small process for them to do. So just in short, they have 2 years to file what's called a notice of intent to file. So government, of course, we have, you know, a plan to plan. That's basically what that is they're just saying, we're going to create this planning document for you to apply for a watershed permit. They have 2 years to do that. And then they have a further five years to develop their watershed plans themselves. So they've got some time, but it's not a small lift for some towns. Falmouth, as an example, has like 14 out of the 30 watersheds that are currently targeted. So they've got a heavier lift than some of the others.
As the towns apply for watershed permits outlining how they will reduce nitrogen, are they required to use state-approved methods? And if so, what are the state-approved methods?
Well, the default thinking with all the watershed plans is to move towards sewering as much as possible. It's viewed as the gold standard in wastewater treatment, if the goal is just merely treatment, of course. But towns are able to employ a number of different potential technologies or techniques. They can look at stormwater remediation, because stormwater can be an input for nitrogen into the estuaries. They can look at things called permeable reactive barriers, which intercept plumes of nitrogen in groundwater. They can look at alternative septic systems, the advanced technologies that are available. And then some of the other things are like nitrogen credit trading, where if like one town has more capacity to remove than another, they can figure out some sort of an agreement where there's like some trading going on there. But towns are able to look at this suite of technologies and different options, which were really the Cape Cod Commission helped to spell out in the 208 planning process. They generated a whole big report and a menu of options for towns to look at so that they can kind of pick and choose what makes the most sense for different areas and different watersheds in their towns.
In the meantime, Title V septic systems are still being allowed for new construction, right?
For the time being, yeah.
Even in the nitrogen sensitive areas?
Well, so that's a little bit trickier. So in the regulations from July 1st of 2023, at 6 months after that date, which I think we've gone by at this point, if the towns had not yet filed, so they haven't filed that notice of intent to do a watershed permit, then all new construction within those towns that are in those nitrogen-sensitive areas would have to do advanced technologies, regardless of whether there was going to be sewering there later or what the plan was. So if the towns file that paperwork within that period of time, then that forestalls that new construction time frame, just like it does for the existing systems with the 5-year time frame.
So do towns, boards of health, or building inspectors have any power to limit new Title V septic systems being put in?
To some extent. I personally served on the Board of Health in Mashpee for a number of years, and that was one of the challenges there, which is, you know that what's being done isn't necessarily the best thing for the environment, but you have a set of regulations that you have to really guide by. You can't go by what you feel about it. You have to say, this is what Title V says, and if Title V allows it, the regulations allow a homeowner to do something in a certain way, do a standard system, or, you know, use some of the other mechanisms in Title V to put bigger houses on smaller lots. You can't really say no. Mm-hmm. You risk a legal challenge on that. So, mm-hmm. you know, your hands are a little bit tied. I always struggled with that personally when I'd see one and I'd think, you know, this really isn't in the spirit of what we're trying to do here, but we can't say no to it.
I think it's still some misconceptions about Title V. People go, I got Title V. I'm good, right? So, but Title V doesn't remove the nitrogen, right?
Standard pipe and stone leach fields and standard Title V systems are not really made to remove nitrogen or phosphorus. Mm-hmm. Title V systems were, Title V first has been around for quite a while itself, but it was really intended to remove a lot of the older things we had on the Cape. Cesspools were very popular, and we still have lots mm-hmm. of cesspools around. Title V was really intended to take wastewater, get it away from people as quickly as possible, and get it into the ground and disposed, and keep public contact away from it, because the primary concern was pathogenic bacteria and people getting sick and pollution of surface waters. It didn't really look at, you know, there's this nitrogen component in wastewater, which has been known for a long time, and it's only really become evident more recently. But Title V, as it stands right now, in the sort of well, I guess the new regulations kind of changed that viewpoint. But a standard Title V system was never really designed for nitrogen and phosphorus treatment. It was mm-hmm. really just for those pathogens and other bacterial food for surface waters.
Yeah. Okay, so for those who are new to the conversation, describe how the different eco toilets work. We have composting, incineration, urine diversion. Do you mix, toilets to mix? They use water to flush the waste. Tell us about the different options.
Yeah, sure. I can speak to that. So there's, really a wide variety of what we call eco toilets. And they can range from, very simple portable containers that basically collect urine or feces, usually mixed with wood shavings, and keep it completely separate from water. more advanced systems include things like split bowl urine diverting toilets, which basically have a separate urinal in the front edge of the toilet fixture, and then the regular opening in the back of the toilet. So that basically separates the urine without water flush, or with a very small amount of water flush, and the feces would go out of the back of the toilet through, the standard system. And then beyond that, there's composting toilets, dry composting toilets. So essentially what that is a toilet fixture in the bathroom that goes through an open chute and into a composting unit, which is usually housed in the basement. Actually, something we're looking at the test center is something called a vacuum flushed composting toilet. So in situations where you don't have a vertical drop or a basement beneath the building, you can actually use this vacuum system to move the material into a holding tank, more horizontally.
A lot of options.
There's a ton of options out there, and I'm honestly still learning myself.
Urine diversion or no mix toilets are not new technology, right? But recently they're generating a lot more interest, it seems. Why?
Yeah, I think, related to the regulatory changes that Brian was just speaking about, I think that's really inspired people to look for other options. Sewering, like Brian said, is sort of the gold standard for meeting these, nutrient management requirements. But as we all know, sewering is very expensive. It's, very invasive in the community. Everywhere I drive, I see roads torn up. Mm-hmm. So this I think interest in urine diversion and eco toilets in general is inspired by, the concern about the level of impact and the cost of sewering.
I think one of the other things, too, is there are a lot of people who see urine diversion as something they can do now. Like, mm-hmm. I could do this now and I can help now.
Yeah. And I was going to say, it seems like the urine diversion toilets are getting a lot of buzz. So I'm wondering, are they better options than the incinerating or composting toilets? Or what are you finding as interest? Or is it equal?
I don't want to say better option. The incinerating toilets are interesting because they basically take all the waste and turn it into ash, you know, mm-hmm. so there's really nothing to manage other than, a very small amount of ash that could go in a trash can mm. with any standard waste. But they use quite a bit of energy. And the other issue that I have with a incinerating toilet is it doesn't provide any sort of nutrient resource to be reused after. So, you know, in my mind and a lot of the advocates for eco toilets, part of it is managing the nutrient pollution, but part of it is also recycling the nutrients as a resource afterwards. Right. So both composting and urine diverting toilets allow for that.
And so we have a pilot program for no-mix toilets was proposed in the town of Falmouth. What are the goals of the pilot, and how is the program laid out in terms of number of households and data collected?
Yeah, so the Falmouth Water Quality Committee reached out to us at the test center to put together a proposal to design a pilot study of urine diversion in Falmouth. Our response or the proposal that we designed initially was really just to sort of, assess, what would this look like at the community scale? And I think we initially proposed something like 25 households retrofitting their bathrooms. So basically taking out their water flush toilets and putting in these urine diverting or composting toilets. And the goal with that would be to, see how they work, see how acceptable they are to the users, and then to assess what the nutrient pollution impacts are. So to actually, measure the amount of urine taken out of the waste stream, measure the nutrient content in that, and then also measure what's left over in the septic system, because you'd still have a septic system there for gray water and whatever mm-hmm. other, water was coming out. So really to kind of assess the nutrient management performance. Now the Water Quality Committee came back to us after a few months and asked us to sort of increase the scope of that project. I think their motivation behind that was based on some conversations with MassDEP to look at this as an IA septic system, basically look at urine diversion as an IA septic system and look for a process to move it towards general use approval in the state. Mm-hmm. And so that's why the latest proposal, the updated proposal, has increased the number of households and the period of time that we'd be monitoring them.
And of course, costs, right? So what are the costs associated with the pilot, and how could it be funded?
We're still working out cost figures, but the latest request in a petitioner's article for the upcoming town meeting is $1.9 million, and that would be for 50 to 75 households over a period of 4 years. A lot of that money included subsidies to cover some of the cost of those installations.
Okay. So there's been some pushback from Falmouth town officials about the costs of the pilot program. So do we know where the pilot stands now?
So the finance committee has made recommendations to sort of hold off on the proposal at this point. I think more due to kind of unanswered questions and sort of, foundational work that needs to be done to make the project shovel ready. I don't think it's necessarily the dollar figure that's holding it up. I think it's more, recognizing that there are regulatory challenges. Mm-hmm. Like, the urine diverting fixtures we want to install are not approved by the state plumbing board. And so therefore the local plumbing inspector can't, certify, those installations. And then on the other end of things, we need approval from like DEP, to approve, the collection systems and transportation of the urine and then, processing and whatever, sort of reuse or disposal pathway it's going to take.
I bet you got a lot of people who would want to do it, though.
We're seeing a lot of interest. Yeah. The nonprofit Green Center in the town of Falmouth, along with the Falmouth Pond Coalition, have done quite a bit of outreach to sort of get a list of people together who are interested. And I believe that number's like 140
wow.
or something at this point.
Mm-hmm. So then you got to figure out how you pick who gets booted off the list,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. Wow. No, I think we'd have to, do a preliminary assessment and look at those households and see, who are the best fit.
Right.
For this.
We're talking wastewater this morning. 866-999-4626 is our number. If you'd like to join the conversation, you have a question, 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. We'll talk more after a quick break. You're listening to The Point. We're talking wastewater this morning, and in particular, eco-toilets. 866-999-4626 is our number. Our email address The Point at capeandislands.org. With us this morning, Brian Baumgartel. He's the Senior Environmental Specialist with the Barnstable County Department of Health and Environment and Director of the Massachusetts Alternative Septic System Test Center. Brian Horsley is the Project Assistant at the Mass Alternative Septic Test Center and is currently studying how to use urine collected from no-mix toilets. Do you have an eco toilet? We'd love to know what you think. 866-999-4626. Our email address, thepoint@capeandislands.org. So have any other communities that you're aware of in Massachusetts or beyond conducted similar studies around urine diversion toilets? And if so, can data from that research be used to help demonstrate effectiveness of these toilets from removing nitrogen in our area? Do you know of anything?
Matt, well, I think that, you know, the number one example is the Rich Earth Institute in Brattleboro, Vermont. You know, we talk about them every single time we talk about urine diversion. And they started around 2012, collecting urine from people around the Brattleboro community. And since then, they've really expanded the program to where they now have hundreds of people contributing to the program annually. They call them urine donors. And so their group of urine donors brings all their collected urine to a central urine depot or collection facility. They're then pasteurizing that urine to kill off any pathogens and actually are working with local farmers applying it as fertilizer. So I think, you know, they're kind of the regional or at least, you know, probably regional or national, leaders in mm-hmm. urine diversion, I would say. I have heard of, other groups that are experimenting with it, but on much smaller scale. There's some work going on out in Portland, Oregon, where there's like an apartment building and a larger building in the city. I really think what we're doing here or what we're proposing to do here in Falmouth is really novel in that, both the scale of it and, sort of the residential community structure that we're working with, as well as I think, exploring urine diversion as a means of meeting regulatory targets. I don't think mm-hmm. that's been done anywhere.
Yeah. All right, Steve is giving us a call from Falmouth. Hi, Steve.
Hi, good morning.
Yeah, go ahead.
I was just curious, since this urine diversion may be beneficial to many towns on the Cape and even on the mainland, why wouldn't it be more appropriate for the funding to come from the county or even the state so that a single town, Falmouth, doesn't need to take the financial risk?
Good question. Thanks, Steve. Anybody have thoughts on that?
It's a good question. At the test center, we're always on the lookout for grant opportunities. It's the way we fund almost all of our research. So we're actively looking for some potential federal or state resources for this. That's through the grant process. Mm-hmm. There are other avenues for obtaining funding that could be looked at, directly through the state legislature. They can align some funds for research in this regard. So, we're always actively looking for, where we can get those resources.
Yeah. And imagine if you had this test program and you could see the results, that might encourage more funding.
Funding. Yeah, exactly.
Or maybe we use the Vermont, what's happening in Vermont as an example. So what households are good candidates for no-mix toilets from a site perspective? Is a home's proximity to the bay, estuary, or freshwater pond a deciding factor? Or is the technology important regardless of where your home is sited?
I mean, I really think of, any home on Cape Cod is in a watershed. Those that are closer to, surface water bodies will have a faster impact on those in terms of their wastewater effluent. But really, everywhere needs to be addressed across the Cape, mm-hmm. in my opinion.
All right. So what are some design issues people should think about if they're considering retrofitting an existing bathroom with an eco toilet? What do you need to know?
So, what we've done at the test center, I mentioned earlier that we've actually gone through an eco toilet assessment process. So we worked with an ecological sanitation consultant, and he basically came through and looked at all of our existing bathrooms and came up with a list of recommendations for it. So it's really kind of a case-by-case basis, depending on, how your house is laid out, if you have a basement, what your individual needs are. So there's a lot to look into.
Yeah. What's the average cost of adding these to existing homes, including the cost of the unit and changes to your plumbing? Is it expensive?
Yeah, again, because there's such a diversity of different fixtures and options, there's quite a range there. But I would say, to throw out a rough range, I think you could get, a urine diverting toilet with a holding tank for, probably $3,000 or less. Mm-hmm. And if you went, full on and put in, large composting bins and were managing like 100% of your waste, I would imagine it could be $10,000 or $15,000.
Yeah. Then if you had multiple bedrooms, or multiple bathrooms, mm-hmm. that's the other piece of it too.
And it's probably easier to install an eco toilet in new construction, I would imagine, than it is to retrofit, right?
Definitely, yeah. If you can design from the beginning, that definitely helps.
So mm-hmm. So what are the regulatory hurdles or roadblocks to getting a urine diversion toilet installed right now? Do you need a permit to have that retrofitted?
Yeah, so, the first step that I think of is actually getting the fixture itself approved. So, there's many, nice formal-looking porcelain fixtures on the market, but most of them are designed in Europe and are not permitted in Massachusetts right now. So that's, one of our first steps is to work with the plumbing board to get those fixtures approved or figure out how to get, variances on the approval process so that we can do this pilot project. Mm-hmm. So that's the collection fixture itself. Then there's, sort of the collection and storage system. So these toilets are connected to a holding tank. So we would need to, get approval on the layout of that holding tank, both from a plumbing and building perspective as well as, a DEP and Board of Health perspective. So there's that. And then beyond that, after you've collected the urine, you need to have it pumped out, transported to a central processing facility. So that's sort of another regulatory hurdle. Mm. And then finally, the goal for this is to be diverting these nutrients from the waste stream and then recycle them as fertilizer. Mm-hmm. So that's sort of the final, application piece. So we're thinking that's sort of in the realm of the Department of Agricultural Resources or DEP or a combination of the two.
Do you find that people who are interested in this are going, well, wait a minute, technology is moving so fast. Maybe I want to wait and see where the technology goes. Is that a concern from some people?
I haven't heard too much of that. I think most of the people that, are sort of the early adopters in this field are just like ready to go. They want to do what they can to protect water quality right now, to the point where, a lot of people are actually using very simple portable containers that, again, these were developed by the Rich Earth Institute. I think some people are willing to, do some,
do what it takes.
Do what it takes, yeah.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah. Love to hear from listeners. If you have an eco toilet, especially a urine diversion toilet, we'd love to know how that's working out for you. And if not, what's standing in your way? What are you worried about? 866-999-4626. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. So if these toilets are allowed in the Mass Building Code, are building and health inspectors up to speed with and comfortable with approving them?
Yeah, not yet. We're in the early phases here. And a lot of the work that we've been doing over the past couple of years, I think, is sort of focused on normalizing this idea, for the general public and for the regulators. Just the fact that we're here on the radio talking about pee, I think is a big step,
Yeah. So do you find some of these regulators visit the test center to see what's happening?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
They come out all the time. They're always very curious about what we're doing. We keep close contact with all of the Mass DEP staff in the wastewater division up in Boston and in the Southeast region. It's important for us to have those connections. And we also work closely with EPA Region 1, which is for the Northeast. So, and even at the national level with EPA's Office of Research and Development. So, we engage our state and federal partners as much as we can so that we're all kind of working in the same direction as best as we can.
How about can people just come to the test center and see what's going on?
Brian does most of the tours nowadays.
Oh, you do tours? Oh.
Yeah, we do tours. So
wow.
If anybody wants to, you can go on our website, look at our email address, shoot us an email. It's spring is coming, so we definitely get a lot more requests for tours in the spring. But if you want to come out, see the latest and greatest in cutting edge wastewater treatment technology and nerd out on wastewater for an hour or so, I definitely recommend signing up
so
for that.
Tell us about the tour. What does the tour include?
Yeah, so the test center where we work is about a two-acre site. Most of what we've done there historically are testing innovative alternative septic systems. So, when you show up there, it looks kind of like a mess. There's sheds everywhere and pipes sticking out of the ground, and, there's a small dirt road around the site. But, once we dig in and start showing you around, there's, really a lot of interesting work happening there. So, we can show you all different sorts of innovative septic systems that are geared for nitrogen removal or phosphorus removal. And then, we're starting to build into this world of eco toilets. So hopefully soon we'll have some more to show on that.
So what are some of the roadblocks for homeowners who want to install eco toilets? And what are your thoughts on how to make the process easier?
Yeah, well, again, it's really the regulatory hurdles, I think, are the biggest challenge right now. So, you know, we just need to continue our work, you know, speaking with regulators and identifying these approval pathways. I think that's that's really the main holdup right now.
Yeah, I think a lot of it is demonstrating to them and giving them a level of comfort. Regulators tend to be pretty risk averse. They're comfortable with what they know right now. And when something new comes along, they're going to try to fit it into the bins that they're familiar with. So there's a lot of this is really, you know, developing the information that they need to say, you know what, I think I'm okay with this. I see where this fits into the regulatory scheme, or maybe we need to make some changes to make it fit better. But that, and that's where this, the relationships with the regulators really come into key play, is making sure that they understand what the latest and greatest technologies are about, how they function, how they perform, and that they're not going to cause a serious public health problem or something like that.
All right. Scott's giving us a call from Harwich. Hi, Scott.
Good morning. My question is on the financial ramifications of the sewering projects versus what the all-in costs of urine diversion systems would be. And I wonder if anyone has ever done a formal financial analysis of to compare those two methods of reducing the addition to nutrients to our water supply. I think the way these projects are approved one round at a time kind of hides the overall cost of the sewering projects. And if we knew how much in total these would cost, both in one-time and ongoing costs, we would have a lot more motivation to explore alternatives like urine diversion.
Yeah, I agree. As we've said, sewering is the gold standard, but it is expensive.
And going up all the time.
It's going up all the time. The cost of things within the last couple of years, the inflation really took a pretty strong impact on the cost of, you know, the commodities that we use in wastewater treatment, which impacts both sides. But if you look at the cost of sewering for some of the ongoing projects on the Cape right now, you're looking at just for this the sewering project. I'm going to put the treatment plant aside. Just the cost of putting out the collection system typically runs somewhere, you know, we're seeing $70,000 to $100,000 per parcel.
Wow.
Which is a big cost. And fortunately, homeowners don't see that full cost. Usually a homeowner will walk away with a betterment. So the portion that they're sort of responsible for directly, of, you know, $10,000 to $15,000. Towns are trying to cap that in that $10,000 to $15,000 range. And then the remainder of that, so let's just say the sewer connection or the sewer project was $100,000. The remainder of that $85,000 comes from the state revolving fund, so the town borrowing from the state and engaging loan forgiveness through that program. So depending on the availability of funds from the federal government, certain percentages of those loans that are given to the towns are forgiven. There's the Cape and Islands Water Protection Fund, which was set up to help offset the cost of wastewater treatment. It's the short-term rental tax that was in, put in a couple years ago. A portion of that tax goes into that fund, and it's used to pay for some of the wastewater treatment projects. But towns are doing their best to offset the direct cost to the homeowners, but it is expensive. Mm-hmm. And so you're walking away with that you know, $10,000 to $15,000 betterment. That's your piece.
Plus hooking up to the sewer.
Plus hooking up, which is on average, on average, about $10,000 for a hookup. So as a homeowner, you know, you're walking out $20,000 to $25,000, with the sewering project, plus whatever you're kind of paying in taxes and your user charges. So there's a lot of costs. Now you could look at alternative systems as another one that's sort of, you know, a little bit more generally accepted, than, you know, urine diversion at this point. Alternative septic systems for, a new installation where you're replacing everything in the house or the septic tank, the leach field, and putting in this new nitrogen removing technology. We're seeing averages probably $40,000 to $50,000 per house for that. But unfortunately, the way the money is set up right now, those homeowners don't get that same level of subsidy from the state. So if you're getting a sewer, you get basically an 85% subsidy off, you know, cost offset from the state. Whereas if you're told to put in an IA technology, you're not able to get that same benefit. But we're working closely with some of the towns that are looking toward those options to say, how can we fund alternative systems? How could we fund urine diversion once we get to that point? the same way that we're doing sewer, so that we're offsetting costs for those homeowners as well. Because to me, it's not fair. As a homeowner, mm-hmm. you know, if you lived in a town where they're doing sewering and IA systems, if you're a homeowner who doesn't end up on sewer and you have to do an IA system, you're paying for that sewer through your taxes, and then you're going to pay the full cost on your IA
right.
system.
Yeah.
So we're working on that problem with the state, the folks at the state and the revolving fund,
yeah.
and trying to crack that nut.
Yeah, Scott, thanks for that question. What could we or are we doing to better educate builders about options?
Well, we try to engage wherever we can, and I think the builders are showing a lot more interest. We work a little bit with the Builders Association here and there, and the Realtors Association is another important place for us to engage those folks. But we're working on that. You know, we're still pretty small staff working mm-hmm. on this stuff. You know,
yeah.
we pull together the resources that we can, but you know, it's definitely we could always use more help.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Looking for those volunteers in the community to help us engage.
Karen wrote, thank you for the program. Are some of the alternative systems better at treating contaminants of emerging concern, for example, pharmaceuticals and PFAS?
That's a question that comes up all the time. And the answer to that question, unfortunately, is that wastewater treatment, generally speaking, whether we're talking about sewers or on-site systems, aren't really good at doing that. Now, on-site systems do a little bit better, actually, in terms of contaminants of emerging concern, just generally speaking, because they treat smaller batches of wastewater. It takes longer to do that. And in wastewater treatment, the name of the game is all about what we call retention time. So the longer you can let wastewater sit there and let the bacteria do what they do and break things down, the better. Mm-hmm. So in an on-site system where you're giving it, you know, 200-300 gallons a day, it has a long time to work through that treatment process. In a treatment plant, you're pushing through 1 million gallons a day. There's not a lot of that treatment opportunity. So treatment plants struggle with CECs and those other contaminants. Now, the advantage there is that if you have a way to remove, if a way to remove those contaminants is found, you could easily put it on the end of the pipe. I don't know what the cost of that would look like or whether that technology is right around the corner or not. Mm. But yeah, CECs are definitely a major concern.
Yeah. We are talking about wastewater treatment options and alternatives. 866-999-4626 is our number. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address, thepoint@capeandislands.org. We'll talk more after break. You're listening to The Point. We're talking about wastewater this morning, treatment options and eco toilets, alternative septic, what options are out there for us. 866-999-4626 is our number. Our email address, thepoint@capeandislands.org. With us this morning, Brian Baumgartel. He's a senior environmental specialist with the Barnstable County Department of Health and Environment and director of the Massachusetts Alternative Septic System Test Center. Brian Horsley's project assistant at the Mass Alternative Septic System Test Center. He's currently studying how to use urine collected from no-mix toilets. All right, so we need to tackle our wastewater problem and build more housing stock. Where do you see the best use of no-mix toilets in new construction? Would it be single-family homes or accessory dwelling units, or is it possible to use them in larger-scale housing complexes?
Yeah, I mean, I really think all of the above. You know, I think they're suitable in any sort of situation, you know, whether it be an apartment building, you know, a single family home or even an ADU. Actually, you know, I've seen quite a bit of interest in the ADU community for these, because that's, you know, wastewater is really one of the big limiters to mm-hmm. to what you can do on an individual parcel. So, you know, I see, you know, eco toilets, you know, offering another option there.
Yeah. We talked about some of the costs, Brian, and what about tax credits?
Yeah, that's a pretty important recent change. So the state government recently increased the tax credit that homeowners can get for replacing their septic system. It used to be a $6,000 credit that you could take over, I think 4 years was the way it worked. They recently just increased that to $18,000.
And, oh, wow.
Yeah,
big increase.
Yeah. And you can take that over 5 years. So it's a non-refundable credit. It's not like the child tax credit mm-hmm. where it, like, you probably get money back. With this tax credit, it's non-refundable, so it kind of reduces your tax liability for the year. You can claim up to $4,000 over 5 years. And the maximum credit is $18,000 max, and it's 60% of the project or $30,000, whichever is less.
Wow. Yeah. I talked to Ann, who's giving us a call from Hatchville. Hi, Ann.
Good morning. I was wondering, why doesn't Massachusetts do gray water systems, allow those such as they have in California that separate the dishwasher, shower, and washing machine waters so they aren't mixed with the urine, and then they route those out separately to, you know, irrigate lawns and that sort of thing?
I think we need to do more of that in our area. You know, I always come back to the sort of waste treatment hierarchy, right? And we all know it. We talk about recycling pretty frequently in terms of our trash. So if you look at the hierarchy, it's reduce. And these are the two R's we always forget about. Reduce, which is at the top. Mm-hmm. Reuse, which is to take it and directly reuse it, right? So if you have a plastic container that came with yogurt, you reuse the container in your house. Recycle is where you turn it into some sort of system where they take it apart and build it into something new. So they take your yogurt cup, they melt it down and make, you know, another plastic bottle out of it. And then the final in that is the worst thing, which is disposal. So now if you think about this in terms of wastewater treatment, reduce, let's reduce all of our water use. Now, we really can't reduce the amount of urine we produce in a day, so there's only so much we can do there. But we can look at the other sources in our homes like, you know, fertilizer and those kinds of things. Reuse. So that's where urine diversion comes in. It's like, let's reuse the nutrients that we're producing every day. So we're higher up in this hierarchy right now by reuse. Recycle is kind of what we do when we take gray water systems. So we would take gray water, we treat it, and we recycle it into something else we can use to try to get the water component into something we can safely use on the property for watering plants. The bottom is disposal, and that's the worst thing that we could do. And that's what wastewater treatment is really focused on right now, which is get it to a treatment plant, get it treated, get all the stuff out of it, and put it back into the environment and dispose of it. There's no capture of the material. There's none of that stuff. So that's what I think is really kind of cool about urine diversion, is it keeps us higher up in that sort of waste treatment paradigm, and I think that's where we should try to shoot for in all our efforts.
Yeah, Dee Dee writes, there's a great organization in Vermont called Rich Earth Institute, which you mentioned, Brian, that collects urine from households and turns it into fertilizer for farmers, a win-win. So what do we do with this urine?
Yeah, so that's the goal, what you just said right there. I mean, you know, this is we need to start viewing the nutrients that are in our wastewater as a resource and not a waste product. And I think, you know, the more that we can work to keep them out of our water supplies to begin with, the better off we'll be. You know, I think that this concept that, you know, we can add all this pollution to water and then find some efficient method to then get it back out just doesn't make any sense if you think about it that way.
So some people say you can collect and use urine as fertilizer for your yard. How is this different from letting the urine go into the septic system? Is it just that the plants can immediately take up and use the urine when it's used as fertilizers versus having it, you know, sequestered in a septic leach field? What's the difference?
Yeah, I mean, that's basically it. If you think about, you know, using a conventional septic system, you know, you're flushing all these nutrients underground away from all the organic soil layers. And so most of that is just, you know, I think of it like a groundwater injection system almost. You know, it's just leaching down through sort of inorganic sand and making its way to the groundwater table, where it then, you know, gets transported to a surface water eventually. With urine diversion, you can pull those nutrients out and apply them at appropriate rates for plants to take them up. So, you know, it isn't just like take the urine out and then dump it in your yard in large volumes.
That was my next thing going with. Yeah. What about the smell, right?
No, there's specific ways, you know, dilution factors, you know, you want to add some water to it, make it suitable as a fertilizer, and then apply it at appropriate rates. And if you do that, there should be very minimal leaching.
And I think that we need to do, part of this project is to figure out what that management scheme looks like, because you know, we want to be able to access the nutrients that are in urine. We also want to make sure we're properly protecting the public health from the reason we created Title V systems in the first place was because we had problems with that. So one of the things that Brian's been working on is like, how do we manage that from start to finish? It's not just getting people to use urine diversion. It's really the key piece of this is how do you manage it after it's been collected?
That's a good question, because maybe I don't want to collect my urine and put it in my garden, but I want somebody else to come and get it and go use it, right?
Right. And I think the ideal output or one of the ideal outputs of this project is to the development of what that service would look like. Maybe that's a municipal service. Maybe that's a private company who comes and pumps your urine tank out and takes it to a facility where it gets processed. And maybe even someday they send you a check to say, thank you. We produce fertilizer out of this. Here's your cut of what we produce. So
that'd be some incentive, wouldn't it?
If we stop looking at it as waste and look at it as a resource, it changes the paradigm.
All right. Ian's giving us a call from Hyannis. Hi, Ian.
Hello. So my question has to do with the increasingly popular on boats, Airhead, which is a urine separating unit, and it's easy enough to know what to do with the compost, set it aside for a year, at some friendly person's house who will take my whatever, the urine, what do you do with that? Pour it overboard, pour it on the ground.
Yeah, I mean,
don't
don't pour it overboard.
yeah, pouring it overboard is not great. That would be directly fertilizing the water. I know a lot of people do it. I'm a sailor myself, so once you get far enough offshore, people think that's okay. In general, though,
I think a lot of people out there.
So I think in general, getting it back on land and applying it around some hedges or something, would be. A good way to recycle it. But like Brian mentioned, that we do need to be careful with, how we recommend doing this. There need to be, health considerations taken into account. So, we're looking at the processing scheme and hopefully there will be, sort of central processing facilities that could take diverted urine in the future. We're working on developing a pilot one at the test center, but, we may want to pasteurize this material to kill off pathogens. There's different steps you can take to stabilize the nutrients so you're not off-gassing ammonia to the atmosphere. You can strip out the phosphorus, which in many land application sites, you don't want to have as much phosphorus. So we're working on figuring all that out.
Still a lot to figure out here, isn't it?
Definitely is. There's also a misperception that urine is completely sterile. Urine is absolutely not sterile. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of bacteria in urine that are not, they don't necessarily make us sick. But as we've learned, our bodies are filled with loads and loads of bacteria. So it only follows that your urine also has bacteria in it. So that's where the public health concern is. And it's not just handling your own urine. Like, I think most people would be like, well, I can do this. It's my own. But what if you have guests come over? Mm-hmm. And what if some of them were sick and now they're shedding virus into their urine?
And pharmaceuticals as you mentioned.
There's a lot of questions.
Yeah. So I think also people, aren't really comfortable with the thought. I told you guys before, we were thinking composting toilets. We're like, oh, I wonder what that smells like. And then we were over in the vineyard, one of the libraries, and they had a composting toilet. We're like, wow, this thing's great. But I think, in our heads, if we can't see and look at these things and try them out, we have a perception that might not be accurate, right? Mm-hmm. Which I guess is why you want to visit the test center and take your tour.
Right.
Yeah. I'm very excited to get our eco toilets installed at the test center so, future visitors and tour groups can come and actually see them firsthand. Mm-hmm. And I would totally agree, your comment on, it not being such a bad experience, because a lot of the way these systems are designed, most of them have negative airflow. So they have some sort of a vent fan. So when you're actually in the bathroom,
you smell nothing.
All the air from the bathroom is going down the toilet. So it's actually less smelly than water flush toilets in my experience.
So some of the experiments you're working on that you're excited about, what are you working on? A lot, right?
Yeah, there's a lot going on. We just worked with the Green Center recently and did a sort of a short-term urine diversion pilot project in Falmouth. We had 41 households divert urine for 2 months, and we did all of the nutrient analysis on that, and we found just really impressive numbers. So, the average for those 41 homes was about 7,000 milligrams per liter of total nitrogen and about 500 milligrams total phosphorus. And compared with like conventional wastewater, which is around 100 milligrams per liter, it's clear. It's such an extremely nutrient dense substance. It just further support that this really makes a lot of sense.
What are you finding from the folks that are trying this out? What's been the response? Are people going, yeah, I want to continue this? Or what are the thoughts people have when they are trying these experiments?
I think that, people feel good. It makes people feel like you're immediately doing something to improve the environment. And everyone that I've talked to is like planning on sticking with it. Yeah. So at this point, it's not even up to us whether it keeps happening or not. It's happening. Yeah. And so we need to figure out how to best manage it.
So if enough people switched over to no-mix toilets to make meaningful change in the amount of nitrogen being introduced to the environment, would the amount of solid solid waste that was going into septic systems still pose a problem, or would that not?
Solid waste going into septic systems, I mean, some of that won't go away. I mean, we're still going to have sinks. We're still going to have showers. We still need to have some sort of a waste treatment system. I mean, ideally gray water treatment on mm-hmm. your property. But let's just say you had your, you know, you have your septic system and now you're just using that for the gray water in the house. That's still going to produce solids that don't break down. You're still going to have to get it pumped. Those solids are still going to have to go somewhere. Treatment plants are going to produce solids. And thanks to this compound, which everybody has heard about at this point, PFAS, mm-hmm. We have a whole heap of problems with relation to solids and what we're going to do with them long term, yeah. particularly for Cape Cod. So
still a lot of work to figure out.
There is a lot to figure out.
Courtney is giving us a call from Falmouth. Hi, Courtney.
Hi. I'm curious to know how you would deal with getting medications out of urine before the urine's used for other purposes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I knew we'd get that question today. That's a really common one, and that's, I would say, probably the number one concern of regulators that we've spoken with about, mm-hmm. you know, the reuse of urine. Initial findings from the Rich Earth Institute in Vermont are that, you know, although pharmaceuticals are found in urine, the levels are very, very low, so they're not too concerned about it. Mm-hmm. If it does, you know, persist as a regulatory problem or, you know, a health concern, there are options for filtering. So I think they're looking at, like, carbon filtration as an option to remove those pharmaceuticals.
Mm-hmm. And I will add, right now, we take our urine goes into some sort of a waste treatment system. Those pharmaceuticals are not well broken down, and they're going into our groundwater mm-hmm. right now, today.
Right.
So we already have a problem.
Yeah, which when we're sampling, right, we find some pharmaceuticals. If it's sitting, like you're talking about, when the urine sits in a smaller batch, does that also work for pharmaceuticals and stuff, or is it more complicated than that?
Like storing to remove them?
Yeah.
So I was actually involved in a study about storing urine in order to kill off pathogens, mm-hmm. which it will do fairly well because as urine, when it leaves the body, is roughly neutral pH. It's around 7 pH. But after setting for a time period, it rises up to around a 9 pH, which is, you know, sort of very basic, the opposite of acidic. And that does a lot of work to kill off, you know, virus and bacteria, although I'm not sure how that affects pharmaceuticals.
Yeah, still so much to learn here. So what are some of the other research projects underway at the test site that are exploring uses for wastewater?
So one of the projects we've been working on for a while is looking at pathogen reduction in wastewater through on-site systems for potential reuse applications. That was a large study funded by both Mass DEP and US EPA through some grants that we received to look at can we reuse the wastewater coming out of, you know, some of these newer treatment units, which might include membrane technologies and those types of things. So that's been an active ongoing area of research. We've also been looking for a number of years there at how can we utilize wood chip amended leach fields. We call them layer cakes as a means for reducing nitrogen in a very passive way. And then broader within Barnstable County, you know, Mass TC is part of Barnstable County, and we have a number of programs that are really wastewater oriented. And one of those is how do we manage on-site systems in a way that's more unified and makes it easier on homeowners and takes some of the risk away from homeowners. We mm-hmm. call that a responsible management entity program, which we've recently renamed to septic utility program. And then we also have our Aquafund program, which helps homeowners pay for their wastewater treatment projects as well. And we're researching ways that we can help help homeowners in that regard as well. So, you know, we've got a ton of really exciting stuff work going on.
And everybody's afraid of change. Change is inevitable, right? So don't be afraid of change, right?
Absolutely.
Brian Baumgartel is a senior environmental specialist with the Barnstable County Department of Health and Environment and director of the Massachusetts Alternative Septic System Test Center. Brian Horsley, project assistant at the Mass Alternative Septic System Test Center, is currently studying how to use urine collected from no-mix toilets. And we'll have a link with more information at our website, CapeAndIslands.org. Thanks for being here, and thanks for the work that you're doing. It's very exciting. I can't wait to hear where this all leads us.
Thank you so much for having us.
Yeah, thank you.
I'm Indy Todd. Thanks for listening.